Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, with an old friend and very much admired colleague, Dr. Gal Luft. He is the co-director of a terrific organization based in Washington, D.C., called the Institute for the Analysis of Global Security. He's also a senior advisor to and driving force behind another extraordinarily important outfit. It's called the United States Energy Security Council. He is the author of numerous books, many of them co-authored with his colleague, Anne Corrin, including Petropoli, The Collapse of America's Energy Security Paradigm. Dr. Luft, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Good to be with you, Frank.
I want you to help all of us understand what is going on at the moment with Saudi Arabia driving down the price of oil by refusing to agree to production cuts, and in fact, apparently ramping up production at a time when that is translating really into quite significant decreases in the price of oil. What are they up to?
It's actually very simple. They declared war against the American energy industry. They figured out that it cost them $5 to produce a barrel, and it costs most of the North American guys $60 or $70 or $80 or $100, much more. So all you have to do is keep the price low for enough time for the Americans to go bankrupt. And then you come back and dominate the market, which is exactly what they're doing. They are going underwater, holding their breath, and they hope that once they resurface, they will look around and see nobody's left.
And this isn't just your speculation, is it, Gal? This is what the Saudi Arabian oil minister, Ali Al-Naimi, actually told members of OPEC they were intent on doing. Talk about that, if you would.
Yes, I mean, we know from leakages and from people who were actually at the meeting, this is what he said. And the reason he had to say it is because many of the OPEC members did not like this plan because they have more urgent need. They need high oil prices today. They don't have time to wait. But the Saudis have a unique advantage because they have $750 billion in cash reserves that they could afford to wait a year or 18 months and live off this money. Venezuela doesn't have it. Nigeria doesn't have it. Iran, Iraq, all the other guys don't have it. But the Saudis are well-financed, so they can afford to live with lower oil prices to accomplish their goal.
Even though they know that the effect of this is going to be to take down the United States and build up over time the price of oil by a means of essentially manipulating supply and demand. This is, in fact, as you've taught me, Gal, something that they have done in the past as well. This is an old playbook that they're reverting to, right?
Yes, to remind the listeners, after the oil embargo, President Carter, for example, had a big Sin Fuel corporation with a big plan to create alternative fuels made from coal, for example. And that's what they did at the same time. They flooded the market with oil to make sure that all the competition evaporates. It's called dumping. You know, it's basically what dumping is all about. You dump enough product, bring down the price, and make sure that all your competitors, the higher cost competitors, evaporate, and then you dominate the market.
Gal Luft, what do you anticipate will be the effect on American energy producers if this kind of manipulation continues by the Saudis for any length of time?
Well, we already see that some of the producers are rethinking their investments. Some of them may be shutting down wells or capping them. There's another element here that is very important, Frank, that we're getting closer to a point that the Fed is going to decide to increase its interest rates. And that means that borrowing costs for the oil and gas producers will increase, and that will make them even less competitive than they are today. So that's another factor to keep an eye on. But overall, look, they came into this business, all the frackers, came into this business under the understanding that oil is $100. That's how they pitched the deal, the investment plan to the investors. Now, prices are much lower, so that's a huge problem for them. And I think it will have a chilling effect on the American oil industry.
Well, I want to come back to, you know, what we need to be doing about this. But just one other quick question, Gal. You are a preeminent expert on international energy issues and dynamics. What is this current price level likely to do to some of the other countries that you mentioned that are desperate for near-term revenues? Russia, for example, Iran, perhaps, Nigeria, Venezuela, especially. Are we likely to see them lashing out? Are we likely to see them taking other measures to begin to compensate for what's happening to them economically?
Or we're likely to see them melting down. Look, we have next February, we have elections in Nigeria, and we might well see after the election serious instability in this part of the world because they are very seriously challenged economically by all of this. Venezuela is a basket case. It's already in the process of economic meltdown as it is. So that could get much worse. Russia's biggest bet is seeing instability in the Middle East because they hope that this will drive up the price of oil. So I wouldn't be surprised if Russia will try to steer some trouble in the Middle East to a degree and increase tension to push prices back up. So yeah, I mean all of them are challenged by this and will have different implications for each country. But it's certainly, look, Frank, we've been working on this to cause this exact outcome, but I think that the difference is that we haven't really solved the problem. And the important thing to realize is that oil is like any other commodity. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. The question is whether we're going to use the time in which we can all enjoy low oil prices to continue with the effort to diversify our fuel supply so that oil no longer has a monopoly in the transportation fuel sector.
And Gal, talk, if you would, quickly about how we do that, and particularly how do we do that with this kind of circumstance, with the kind of lower prices and presumably cuts that will flow from it in terms of production of, say, natural gas.
It is a decision that we need to make that cars can no longer run on petroleum fuels alone. Cars should be able to run on a variety of fuels because sooner or later the price will go up again and it could actually go up dramatically higher and it could be very painful. So we want to make sure that once that happens, we are prepared that our cars can run on other fuels like natural gas, like methanol, like ethanol, like electricity, whatever, not only oil. And if we sort of indulge ourselves with low oil, low gasoline prices and sort of sit on our laurels for a few more months or maybe 2 or 3 years, we will do ourselves a huge disservice because we have to understand this is a temporary situation. It's not going to last for long, and we could be facing quite soon a perfect storm that could take prices to an entirely different direction and send us back into another recession cycle. So I would like to see Washington staying the course, continuing in the effort to open up the fuel supply and the vehicles to competition, and not sort of get into this mode of complacency that we're so likely to forget.
Gal Luft, we look forward to further conversations with you about all of this in the near future. Thank you very much for this report. Come back to us again very soon. In the meantime, keep up the terrific work you do at the Institute for the Analysis of Global Security and the U.S. Energy Security Council. Next up, Gordon Chang joins us. We'll talk with him about whether the Philippines are just being crybabies, as the Chinese put it, for taking the Chinese to court over their aggression in the Western Pacific. Straight ahead.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.